I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Later, we're going to meet the actor Nathan Sutton. Autumn Wanderer, his first film as writer and director, tells the story of a man losing control and who learns that you can't run from who you are. And on Soundbites, LaGaia Figueres of Sauce Magazine will join us with two of the magazine's restaurant reviewers, Michael Renner and Matt Berkeley, for a look at what they think was some of the best food and drink in St. Louis over the past year. Tonight and Saturday night and Sunday, the St. Louis Symphony performs the music of John Williams. The Symphony's New Year's Eve celebration is Tuesday, and here with more on these events and a look ahead is the St. Louis Symphony's music director, David Robertson.
Hello there.
Hi, David. Welcome back.
Oh, it's nice to be here, Steve.
Have you had some quality family time the last few days?
Yeah, very good. We had lots of kids around, still have lots of kids around right here in St. Louis. Luckily, the apartment here is very large, and so we're in good shape.
A lot of foldouts.
Actually, yeah, when girlfriends start arriving, it actually gets a little bit complex with sleeping arrangements, but I think we have it covered.
Are the two older boys, I guess they are of that age.
They are indeed, yeah. 23 and soon to be 22.
Oh, wow. Was Santa good to you?
Yes, Santa was very nice at our household in the form of my wife, actually. She enjoys my guitar playing, which is surprising given that she's such a good musician, but she puts up with it. So I got a Spanish-style classical guitar for Christmas, and it was just, you know, it's my first time with nylon strings. It's a whole new experience.
Have you mastered that yet?
No, because you actually, to master anything, you have to practice, and that time is a precious commodity for me.
Something to look forward to in the new year, I guess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, David, the week before Thanksgiving, I think it was, we had a great live interview with Adam Crane as he was standing off stage at Carnegie Hall and you were on stage about to begin a rehearsal for a performance that night.
Yes, that's
And it
right.
went very well, I understand.
Peter Grimes was really an absolute highlight for the orchestra as well as for the chorus. I don't think I've seen that kind of critical response. I knew we had something good when we were here in St. Louis and played it for everyone here. But it's one of the things that in New York, people know the piece really well. It's one of Benjamin Britten's most famous works. It's really the work that got him started as an international composer, and it requires not only the finest, you know, soloists, but also an orchestra and chorus who are really up to the level, and we hit it right out of the ballpark.
We talked to Sarah Brian Miller after. She said some nice things, and I read a great review in the New York Times.
Yeah, Anthony Tomasini, the head critic, was nice enough to put us in the top five concerts of the season. Actually, he had a list of top 10, but we still made it into the top five, which I'm very proud of.
That's great. Well, before we talk about things coming up, looking back on this year, since it's almost behind us, any highlights or things that have stood out to you?
Oh, you know, there's so many. I mean, I'm so impressed by the chorus just because of what they did in Peter Grimes. And then only a couple of weeks later, they were singing, you know, Bach's Christmas Oratorio with as much agility and poise and style as you could ever wish for. And that's the sort of thing which is just so inspiring. At the same time then, you know, we had Yo-Yo Ma back, which was a great thing for the orchestra. And it's an amazing musical family, the St. Louis Symphony, and it's always wonderful to kind of broaden out and see audience members who suddenly feel as though they have become part of the musical family when they come to concerts.
You're sort of celebrating an anniversary of sorts, right? Wasn't your first performance with the St. Louis Symphony in January of, I want to say, 1999?
1999. We are coming up for 15 years since I first met the orchestra on Powell Hall stage. And, of course, I met the chorus first, which is possibly why I have a soft spot for both groups.
Hmm. Well, tonight, tomorrow night, and on Sunday afternoon, the music of John Williams.
That's right. One of my all-time favorite things at the movies is to really kind of get involved in the film scores. They contribute so much to the films.
What a prolific composer he is.
You know, he's just amazing. And the number of Grammys and Academy Awards and nominations that he's had in all of these different scores.
Five Academy Awards, 21 Grammys, nominated 48 times.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. And, of course, what's so amazing is when you talk to the man, he is so incredibly nice and gentle and open and humble and very inspiring, therefore. He's just an amazing – he's like an angel, and he can write this angelic music.
I didn't realize until I looked into his history a little more all the things that he had composed for the movies, as you mentioned, Jaws, Star Wars, Superman, Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild, and we're playing a lot of the famous things, but any time that you put together a concert like this, you have a lot of the favorites, which you know everybody is going to enjoy, but there's so many different things that you can put on there. When he's going all the way from things like even just the directors that he's worked with when he works on something like the Harry Potter films, or when he works with Oliver Stone, or when he works with obviously Steven Spielberg or George Lucas. But it's this complete openness to what is the project at hand. And this deep love of music that he has then comes out in his ability to find just the right things which really, you know, tear at our heartstrings in all the right ways.
You could probably do a different performance on all 3 days and not repeat anything.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. If we were to actually play all of his scores in one evening, I think it would be something like a week-long marathon without stopping it, although we might take, you know, occasional breaks for eating and then other things.
So the music of John Williams this weekend, then next Tuesday, New Year's Eve.
And I can't say anything about that.
Every year I try to get you to talk, but you won't.
I know. But it's the thing is, I really love surprises. And it's one of the ways in which I kind of feel one can stress the fact that there's a bond between the St. Louis Symphony and its community, that they know that anything we're going to play, we are going to take utmost care in preparing and presenting. And I think that's wonderful then to have on New Year's a concert where you know you just arrive and you have a really great time and you don't need to worry about any of the other things. Somebody has done everything for you. It's like one of those feasts where you just show up and put your feet under the table and everything works perfectly and it's all delicious.
So the way it works, people just don't know until you get up in front and tell them what's going to happen.
That's it. That's it.
That's always exciting. That is going to be at 7:30 in the evening on New Year's Eve. And then right around the corner, it's the Beethoven Festival, January 10th through February 2nd.
That's right. Beethoven is really great in a period where usually here in St. Louis, the weather tends to get rather chilly and people start bundling up. And so to have that kind of just amazing emotional warmth that Beethoven brings to everything, whether it's the energy or whether it's the poise, the drama, the touching moments, that's something that we wanted to explore. And so we've done it in a number of different ways. We obviously have four really well-known masterworks, the Third Symphony, the Seventh Symphony, the Emperor Concerto, and the Fifth Symphony. But we've paired them with other things that reveal different aspects of what's going on. One of the programs that I'm most pleased with is the one that I'm conducting, which has Beethoven's Third Symphony, the Eroica, which was a major watershed piece and is one of the most beloved classical works. But it was also a period in which Beethoven became aware that he was going to have to make his major statement not as a performer. Up until that time, he had been both a composer but also as a performer. He was a virtuoso pianist. He knew that his playing was as good as anyone's around, and so did other people. And so he wrote these piano concertos, and all of a sudden comes this moment where he understands that his deafness is all-pervasive, and he is not going to be able to escape it. And there were moments in his performances where friends remarked that, in fact, he was playing very softly, and he was not aware that some of the notes actually weren't coming out on the instrument. So he had to retire from public performing and go entirely into composition. At the same time, we tend to think of Beethoven only as the composer. So this Third Symphony, which is really the first point at which he says, I am a composer, but in a sense that's unequivocal, that is not dithering at all. Those opening chords really let us know, here I am. I combine this with the Australian composer, Brett Dean, who is recognized as perhaps Australia's finest composer internationally. And he also happens to be an absolutely amazing viola player. He started his musical career, actually, in the viola section of the Berlin Philharmonic, where you can't really just kind of tag along, even in the viola section. So he's a monster player. And as well, he's a composer, and it connects us with this idea of Beethoven the performer as Beethoven the composer, as Brett is performing his own viola concerto, so written for his own instrument. And preceding that, we have a piece which is called Testament, which is actually based on the Heiligenstadt Testament, which is the sort of testament that Beethoven pours out all of his feelings about this impending deafness and the fact that this is inflicting him when, as a musician, this is the last thing that should be getting at him. And so it's a moment in Beethoven's life which is so incredibly, profoundly depressing. And Brett Dean saw the actual manuscript, which was written in the suburb of Vienna called Heiligenstadt. And In looking at this parchment with the furious scratchings of Beethoven's handwriting, Brett thought, you know, what would it be like to look at the pen and see all of that furious scratching and for Beethoven to hardly be able to hear it? And so it's a piece for 12 violas, so we'll have our viola section on stage by itself, and Brett will take part in the performance as one of the violists. And they play both with bows that have rosin on it, the normal way, which is what makes the sound, and then completely unrosined bows. And when you take an unrosined bow and play on a string instrument, you actually get almost no sound at all. And so the piece opens with a number of the violists playing furiously energetic music with these unrosined bows, and it suddenly puts the whole orchestra in the frame of mind of what it must have been like for Beethoven to look at an orchestra playing, for example, his Third Symphony and not being able to hear it.
I'm not clear. Is that the way it's always done?
That's the way that the piece is done, yeah. That's actually, and the Testament is based on this. And, of course, what's so fabulous in this work, you hear the violas at one point picking up the rosined bows and playing some of the most fabulous music from the string quartet that was written right around the time of the Third Symphony and right around the time of this Testament and right around the time when Beethoven was suffering the most. And I think what's fun for me in the St. Louis Symphony programs is to be able to actually take works that we know and connect them up with other works so that what we can do each time is explore them in real time in the concert hall. So it's not like just hearing them again. It's about going deeper into them and having an experience which is similar to what you know in the theater, where it's a sort of a piece that you get inside of and the whole evening becomes something which is thought-provoking as well as a wonderful balm for the soul.
The Beethoven Festival runs January 10th through February 2nd. We're talking to David Robertson, the music director for the St. Louis Symphony. Coming up in May, Carmina Burana.
We've got Carmina Burana coming up again with the marvelous St. Louis Symphony Chorus. And we've got the orchestra playing a work by Steve Reich, which is called The Four Sections. And one of the things that's fun is we do Carmina Burana every few years. And it's a beloved piece. Most people tend only to know the O Fortuna part right at the beginning, and then they're surprised that there's an extra 40 minutes to the piece. But so there's this question of what do you put it with? And I always love this because you can put it with different things each time. And one of the fun things about this is that anybody who goes and hears the Carmina Burana probably won't know the Steve Reich Four Sections. But it's one of those things that if they like the Carmina, they're going to love that piece. And I'm so excited to sort of introduce people to something that will become a new favorite for them.
Next week on Cityscape, we're going to be talking with a composer, Stephanie Berg.
That's right, a young composer with the Mizzou New Music Initiative with the Sinkfield Charitable Foundation has gotten together to bring all of these composers to Missouri for festivals each year. And I was sent a few scores, two of which we actually incorporated into the season because they were so spectacular. And so Stephanie will tell you all about that next week. But that's one of the great ways in which you see this tradition of composers imagining something in their head and writing it out, continuing to today.
And when we spoke last fall, David, you mentioned, I think, there were five new players. So
that's right.
What's new with that?
Well, you know, you're always in the process of guarding the tradition of the players who've been there for a long time and then always welcoming in new players. And so we have a number of principal players. We have Principal Harp, who's replacing Francis Tietoff, who was with us for 40 years. And that's Allegra Lilly, who's, you know, name is so marvelous that everybody in St. Louis knows her. You know, I mean, if she were any more of an angel, we would have to tie her down to the stage. But she plays one of those instruments already we associate with heaven and plays it in a completely heavenly fashion. And then, you know, we had to bid goodbye to Susan Slaughter a few seasons ago, which was really tough. But we've managed to be able to welcome Karen Bliznick, who has taken over as principal trumpet and is just enchanted all of us with her sound and her personality. She's the one responsible for the YouTube video of the two brass sections, Cardinals and Sox, Boston Symphony and St. Louis Symphony, going head-to-head, which went viral, and I was very pleased about that.
Yeah.
So she's a real wonderful person as well as a live wire and a fabulous musician. And then, in a sense, the heart of the orchestra, coming after our beloved Rick Holmes, is our new love of the rhythm section, Shannon Wood, who is a fabulous musician. I mean, he's a composer. He conducts. He plays timpani. It's one of these things where he really is kind of like the beating heart of the orchestra and gives us all this tremendous rhythmic impulse and sound. Then, of course, on the piccolo, we have Ann Chumack, whom we're welcoming. Piccolo is kind of like that icing on the cake, but really the cherry right on top. And she always knows exactly where to put the cherry on top of the cake of sound and makes everything, you know, not only sound, but look delicious as well.
Cake of sound.
That's right. No, and then new string players who are coming in as well. Ann Fink has joined the first violin section. And there we have auditions coming up, you know, and new people who are being announced. So it's a very exciting time for the orchestra.
And another recording in the works.
That's right. We did a very nice job with our first recording for Nonesuch, where we did the Dr. Atomic Symphony. And the success of that led to a reinvitation to do two more works of John Adams. And one of them is City Noir, which is a big orchestral showpiece. And the other, which we performed really only for the first time in October, was his recently written 2013 saxophone concerto. And this disc will come out, I believe, in the spring on Nonesuch. And we're very excited about it because the orchestra just sounded sensational. And both pieces are really exciting. So I think it's going to make a big splash.
Well, and although we've talked about a lot of things, there's a lot that we haven't mentioned. I want to encourage people to go to our website, stlpublicradio.org, and they can find out more about what the symphony is doing.
No, and we haven't talked about how great the partnership is between the St. Louis
Symphony
Orchestra and St. Louis Public Radio.
Go ahead and do it.
Well, you know, it's really nice every time, you know, for the conductor, because you don't have another piece to warm up in the intermission and they've taken your scores already, so there's no last-minute study. I always ask myself, what can I do? But thankfully, St. Louis Public Radio broadcasts our subscription series on Saturday nights, and so that gives me something to do to go up to the booth and talk to Robert Peterson and Adam Crane.
Right. In fact, they're going to be hosting on the radio the New Year's Eve celebration that we'll be carrying live December 31st, beginning at 7. Let's remind people, though, tonight at 7, tomorrow night at 7, and Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock, it's the music of John Williams. And go to our website for more information. Anything else that I neglected to mention that you would like to?
Oh, just I think that everybody should really have a wonderful, happy, and joyous new year.
I was going to ask you, I don't know if you make New Year's resolutions, but if you were to make one this year, what would it be?
Oh. Really to try and enjoy every moment, because sometimes one gets very hectic in life and you forget that each minute is really precious, and it's very important to savor those things. You know, I have two big boys and I have two little boys, and it is amazing how quickly the little boys turn into big boys. And so you need to really remember that each moment is precious, even when you're sitting in traffic.
Well said. Well, David Robertson, the best to you and to the symphony. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Cityscape, the best in food and drink in 2013. And later, first-time filmmaker Nathan Sutton. This is St. Louis Public Radio.